We have somebody who sent in a question, and I'm going to start with that. So, anybody who wants coaching, just go ahead and raise your hand. All right. The question was, does enough change over time? Does enough become less food than it started out as? So, yes, enough does change over time. The thing I always like to remind people, though, is it's never going to change the way that you're thinking it does. So, most of the time when we think our enough signals are going to change, we automatically think we're going to be our enough levels. We automatically think, oh my God, I'm going to have to eat less and less and less and less in order to lose weight. But it's not always the case. So it really depends on what you've got going on in your life. It depends on what mix of foods you eat. So for me, I can eat more food if I am eating more best foods. So for example, last night I had bought this dish at Publix. This is how small of a town I live in. We got a grocery store. All we had was an Amish, like little bitty grocery store forever. And to get to a store, you had to drive through a lot of traffic to go just 7 miles down the road. We don't have good infrastructure around here. And it would take you like 30 minutes because we just have like one way in, one way out. Well, we finally got a new grocery store. It's a Publix, and it is the rage right now. And so I've been twice, and it opened last Wednesday. And I have not been to a grocery store in probably over a year, if that says anything about grocery shopping. And so I went the second time. I was like, oh my gosh. I told Chris, I was like, look at all the things they have now. And it was a big, like in the kind of like in the seafood and the fresh food, like next to the meat stuff, they had all of these take and bake individual healthy meals that were like real food that you can just pop in your air fryer, and within 25 to 30 minutes, you have a really good meal. So I got this stuffed salmon and broccoli thing, and it had a lot of broccoli. I couldn't even finish my damn salmon. So when we talk about enough, one of the things I want y'all to be thinking about is it doesn't always mean I'm going to eat less and less food until I'm just pecking like a bird. What it really means is my enough levels can change. And one thing that will influence is if while I'm losing weight, I'm also including a lot of best foods along with good and better, and my palate evolves and I eat for more like just, healthier reasons, I'm probably going to be able to eat more food. If you're going to, stay tight on it's pizza for breakfast, it's nachos for lunch, and it's burgers for dinner, you're enough. You know, when you're eating those foods and you're not really getting any vegetables and any fruits and things like that, eventually what happens is you'll have to eat a lot less food. You'll still be getting the new, like the amount of, let's say, just calories for short that you're going to need, but it won't be in the volume that you would probably want to eat in. And that's one of the things that we do have to keep in mind. I want y'all to eat the foods you want, but I want you eating them because you actually have worked through the emotional components of them. You're not just having them because you're afraid if you don't, you'll never get it again. Like, I don't want you eating the foods you love for bastard reasons. Like, I really want all of you to be cultivating this amazing relationship with food. So, another influencer on how much food you get to eat at the end, I'm gonna tell all of you, I'm all about the strength training. Like, we want to be doing it because, like, someone like me who has spent the majority of her weight loss now, I probably lost the first probably 30 or so pounds. I wasn't lifting weights. And then I like got brave and decided to go into the body pump class and didn't make it through most of it the first few weeks. But by the time we'd get to the squats, I was like, I'm out of here. I couldn't do like 1 minute of them because it killed me. And I just always sat my little ass up in the back and where I could break my equipment down real quick and I could get out because I couldn't finish the class. And then eventually I got to where I could finish them. Then I moved on to the weight room. And so I have lifted weights for a long time, still lift. And I know that like one of the gifts I gave myself for the rest of my life is by holding on to muscle and being very muscle focused, I just get to eat more. So when you think about weight loss, a lot of y'all are so about the scale and you're so about getting those pounds down and so about that you will lose weight even if it eventually is at your own detriment, which means, like for me, I never saw the scale really slow down because I was lifting weights. I had periods and times where it, like any normal scale, it doesn't just go like a slope. It's a wavy line that trends down over time. And if you drew a line through all the waves, it would be a slope. So for me, I just was done chasing numbers when I was losing weight. And I was really chasing that lifestyle. I was like chasing the life I really wanted. And I knew that I wanted to be fit and I knew that I wanted to lift weights. And God blessed me with meeting a woman in a spin class who was real into lifting weights. She and I, our sons, both went to the same daycare. We didn't even know it. And then when we got to talking one day after class, she was like, said something about she needed to leave. She had to go pick her son up. And I was like, oh yeah, I got to go pick up mine too. And she happened to say, yeah, I've got to go across. It wasn't across town, but it was like 20 minutes from us. I got to get to the gardener school. I said, funny, that's where my kid goes. And they had the same teacher. And so after that, we became friends. And she's the one that taught me how to work out in the workout room. And she was a real muscle head. And we lifted and we did competitions together after that. And, we're not friends now, but it was other than I just moved away and we got busy and she was busy with her kid. I could text her right now, though, I am sure. And we would just talk like big time buddies and catch up. So I say all that because your enough gets influenced by a lot of things. And I don't want anybody worrying that you're one day going to hardly be eating anything. What is going to happen over the course of your weight loss is, I promise you, like when you're in the beginning and you finally get to eat foods you love to lose weight, it is really fun. Then over time, what happens is because we're allowing you now to just eat those foods and stuff, and we're working on all of the emotional stuff, those foods don't hold as much power anymore. They're not the things that, like, we get you focused more on enjoying your life. We start cleaning up a lot of things that are going on with the way you talk to yourself. I want you taking better care of yourself, like your self-care, all kinds of things. As we fix a lot of those ruptures and a lot of those things that are broken, basically in your internal system, the relationship you have with the foods right now completely changes. It goes from, I need these foods because they are serving a role in my emotional eating. Like they are filling an emotional gap I don't know how to fill yet. And no BS, I start learning how to fill these gaps. Now that food doesn't have a job anymore. It's like we fired it. And now we have to rehire that food. And it's going to get a new job description. And its job is to be fun only. Its job is to be looked forward to only. Like it literally never, ever, ever has to work hard ever again. It's like it's retiring. And it's going to come out of retirement to go to lunch with you and to go to dinner sometimes and to show up at a party and stuff. It's like it's the fun friend now. So I want you to think about that. So like when you are losing weight and you're filling in all of the emotional holes, quality of foods tend to change because you start, when you start really caring about yourself, you start caring about how you feel on like just health-wise. You start like thinking about eating a little bit better and it not feeling like a punishment anymore. It actually feels like a gift. So a lot of that changes. If you lift weights on the way down, you're physically doing yourself a solid. You can lift weights at any time too, y'all. Muscle wants to build and muscle wants to do at any time in your life. It's never too late to start it. And then I think the other thing is when we start filling all those emotional holes and stuff, the foods you like just take on a whole new meaning. And then the quantity of food that you want to eat also takes on a whole new meaning. It also, me feeling full in order to relax, in order to disconnect, in order for me to rest, in order to me to feel like I'm connecting to my family, like me getting past enough, when we fill those emotional holes, that relationship changes too. You start really eating according to what your body naturally needs and wants because now you're not eating to fill those emotional holes that food was never supposed to fill anyway. So, hope that makes sense. It does change. Just pay attention. It changes usually slower than you think. I wouldn't put a ton of expectations on it. I would just know, like, I just don't want to put a lot of expectations on this unless I'm going to put good expectations on it. If you're going to think like I'm one day going to settle into an enough level that's going to feel amazing, I'm going to redefine my relationship with food and myself and my emotions so much so that eating is going to feel like one of the easiest things I do one day. You can put that expectation on there. But if you're going to sit there and tell yourself, like, I'm just going to get to where I can't eat anything. And, it just feels like ass. And it just this and it just that. And it's going to be unfair. Like, if you're going to have those expectations, why would you ever want to get to know you're enough? If all you're enough is doing is denying you shit, holding you back, and it's scary, you are not going to want to find it. Why would we want to find that? If you put expectations on it, like I've been telling you, like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about I could love my enough one day because I'm actually solving all these other things. I'm fixing all these other things. That's how I want you to be thinking about it. Okay. Let's go to somebody said lifting weights sends my body in so much pain. Like lifting 5 pounds feels like I lifted 50 for the next few days. Doctors can't find anything wrong other than I have chronic pain. Any tips for me? I would talk to my doctors then. I would talk to the doctors about your muscle and that if it's going to give you chronic pain, do they suggest you do it anyway or no? And what do they suggest you do? Because having some muscle is important to bone health. And I would like one of the things I think we don't do when we are talking to doctors is we don't really state the entire problem we want solved in so much detail that they either have to get back to you, they have to refer you, or do something along those lines. A lot of times we're just like, well, what should I do? And like a doctor's gonna be like, well, just, try this. If you go in and you say, hey, I've been to the doctors, y'all tell me there's no explanation for my chronic pain every time I lift weights, but I also know how important it is. I need you to tell me what I need to be doing because I do want to preserve my bone health. I do want to be able to, be able to open jars one day when I'm older and things like that. Like I would talk to them about it's very important to me to have functional health. And then from there, let them help you figure this out. But be super clear about what you want to be helped with. Okay, let's go to Kathleen.
Hi.
Kathleen, how are
Hi.
you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What you want coaching on today?
Well, I started a GLP-1 about 4 weeks. It's been a long, long journey. I've been in and out of your program since about 2020, and when I first started, I over a course of time I lost about 35 pounds, and then I stopped and I gained it back, and since then I've managed to drop now, including what I've lost in the past week, like another 23, almost 24 pounds. And I had started to last year I was on phentermine because you had to be on a different medication to get my health insurance to finally approve, the GLP-1. So that's kind of the short version of like where I've been, which is a little bit over all over the place. And I'm very I'm kind of excited. Like I want to I'm hoping this GLP-1 thing really helps me,
Well, it sounds like it
and
is. You don't have to hope.
well, it's just that it's slow and I'm like I'm
Wait,
wherever you
23
go.
pounds? Are you 20? You're 24 pounds down,
But
right?
that's not in the past month or anything. In the past
Well, I
month,
hope
I've
not.
had 3 pounds. Yeah. I mean, it's about 3.5 pounds in the past like 6 weeks. So
Okay, that's about normal. Why are you calling that slow?
3 pounds in the past 6 weeks.
Yeah. That's a half a pound a week, which the range for people is a
Okay.
half a pound to 2 pounds per week. Most people are going
Okay.
to err on less than a pound. And that is like statistical studies of people who keep their weight off lose about less than a pound a week.
Okay, well that's right. Okay. That's encouraging because I've been feeling, I guess because there's been like in the past 5 years so many sort of like plateaus and then up and then down and then not really down
Yeah,
that
but when
fast,
you gained 35 pounds back, that wasn't because of the scale going up and down. That had to have been emotional
Yes.
eating. There's no way
Exactly.
that somebody, yeah. So I would just be really, really careful how you're describing it. I hit
Okay.
plateaus and then it just goes up and then it just goes down. You're acting like Kathleen had nothing to do with it. Like there's
Oh
this
no.
phenomenon I'm watching that goes on in the world where the scale is just going up and down and I have no clue what's happening. So if
That's
we just,
definitely not what I mean. I
yeah.
understand. I definitely am an emotional eater. I know that, and I'm just trying to like encourage myself to stay on track and like try to deal with some of the things that I know. I think I actually might, even though I really have never. Like I've never been one of those people who's like, I know, I'll just eat pound cake like once a day and that'll be it, whatever that was, and I'll lose weight. I've never wanted to give up eating, in like some crazy way.
Yes.
I'm kind of want to deal with like some of the things that I've been doing lately. I think I have a diet. I think on some level, I have a little bit of a diet mentality. Like I bought peppermint. Those peppermint barks, that come out at Christmas time, the little chocolate things. And I was like, oh, I'll just have like one a day. And then, of course, I had none, I had none, I had none. And then I had like 10. And then I had none, I had none, I had none. Anyway, I moved it to a different location and I
Yeah.
managed one
And we
day.
need to figure out, like, I think what's going on there is in order for you, like you said, like, I want to be someone who loses my weight. And
Yeah.
I know I'm an emotional eater. I think I've got diet mentality going on, which means if you want to be someone, this has nothing to do with the GLP-1.
Right, okay.
Okay. If you want to be someone who keeps that weight off, that means I need to identify all the emotional reasons why I eat, and I need to be working on them. And I need to identify why do I eat no peppermint bark or 10? Why do I not have my gray area? What is it that goes on in my head that prevents me from having a gray area? Because if I don't address that, one of two things will happen. Either I have to come off the GLP-1. Some people are taking it for life, and that's, and some people are just taking it as like a short-term. Let me get my shit together. And then I'm going to, like, they're doing compounds or whatever. Like, it is the wild, wild west out there with it. So, and I know I got members doing all the different things. So I want to say it this way. Some of you are going to come off this stuff. And a lot of you are on it. And right now, it feels amazing because not only the scale going down, but your food noise goes down. Like when you're just not as hungry. Then your body's not talking to you about his food as much. So you were just automatically cutting out some food noise just because of that one reason. Okay. There's other things that could be happening for y'all, but the main one is you just want to think about if I'm going to have to come off this while I'm experiencing this, that doesn't mean that the reasons I was eating have shifted and changed. And just because I'm not hungry over those reasons anymore doesn't mean that I have a better life. So, like, for example, let's say, are you retired or you got kids or grandkids or where are you at in
I'm
life?
working. I'm working full time
So,
plus
you're full time.
yeah,
And
my husband
then,
just retired or he's on disability, so
okay. And I'm just going to make up a scenario. This is not your life. Okay. Let's say that. You go to work every day and it's a hard job. It's kind of stressful and whatnot. And then you come home and your husband's been retired all day and he's not doing anything, but he's also not helping you at night. So, like, not only do you have to work all day, but now you got to come home at night and you got to cook the dinner and you got to, like, kind of take
are you
care of
sure
him.
this isn't my life?
I'm really good at guessing scenarios because I hear them all the time. All right. So, we have reality, right? The reality is, I'm on a GLP-1, but my husband didn't get off the couch and start helping me. I'm on a GLP-1. My job is still really stressful and wears me out. I'm just not eating over it right now. But what I didn't do was figure out how do I manage stress better at my job so that I can enjoy it instead of feeling always stressed and behind or whatever. And how do I set up my thinking and my evenings so that I'm not feeling resentful? Or angry, or sitting there wondering, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're sitting around all day. Can't you cook me dinner now? Look, whatever's going on. So we just have to remember that when you're losing weight. This happens whether you're on a GLP-1 or you're just losing weight using the basics. Just because you're losing weight and you're getting that one piece of the puzzle of your life that you think if you solve it is going to make all things better, it never changes those other pieces until we change. And so what I think happens is you've got to be thinking about, if I really want this weight to come off and I want to feel certain and assured and I don't want to hit long plateaus or risk regains and things like that, I should really be working on the things that had me eating to begin with during this time. And so that just takes intentional reflection, because when you're losing weight, it can give off the air that you've solved problems that aren't really solved. What's happening is, I'm so excited I'm losing weight that that is feels good enough, and this other shit isn't bothering me yet. Eventually, I get used to the weight loss, or I lose enough weight to where I'm pretty satisfied over here. And now the things that are bothering me are rearing their ugly head again. And if I didn't solve them, I either have to solve them then, or I have to go back to eating. And there are plenty of people in our GLP-1 group who have said they lost a lot of weight on it. They're still on them and they're regaining, because eventually the emotional eating, just their emotions over here are so agitated and so aggravated that they will override not being hungry again. Because if you think about all of us who are overweight emotionally, we got that way because we got really good at overriding not being hungry. And eventually you can do that even on a shot. If your emotions are in such a level where they're just like, nothing seems to be changing to make this better, your brain will want to fire up those old neurons and just be like, I don't care if I'm not hungry. I don't want to feel this. So when I say all of that, now what comes up for you?
I'm thinking about last night. So, like, I a lot of things I do know why I'm emotionally well. Last night is an example. So I think I had a really good food day yesterday, which I'm happy about. But then at night, we watched TV programs, kind of, and I realized as I when I finally sat down that one of the things I've been working on with the Ask Coaches is that I need to take breaks, right? So I did that more yesterday, and I finally sat down to we were eating dinner and watching TV and then we watched our favorite program, and I was tired, and I realized, oh, I could have really gone to bed after the first one. But we rolled right into the second one, a little bit of a binge watch. And I ended up eating like one like ice cream, not just one ice cream bar, and then like a big bag of like this popcorn. I mean, it's not like of all the things that I've sort of overeaten on, and the amount of overeating that I've done, it's not the worst that I've ever done. I mean, it's a
Yeah.
lot
And I
worse.
know that that feels really good. And I don't want you to go to beating yourself up, but that thought or beating yourself up, neither one is useful. I want you to
Which
think
thought?
about that. The one where it's not as bad as what I used to do. It takes the focus off of, I wonder why I ate ice cream and popcorn when I was tired. I know I was watching TV. I've been working on getting more rest. I wonder why I still, like, even if I wanted to watch TV, why I still ate. And I think that's important for all of you. It's something we don't talk enough about in here, is we don't want to beat ourselves up. And so we think the opposite is to tell us that's not that bad. That is true. It's just not very useful long term, because what it does is it doesn't open it up to curiosity. Because at the end of the day, what we want to know is, we want to start getting really curious. Whenever I'm eating something or eating in such a way that upon reflection or the way that I planned, I didn't think I needed to do that. It didn't really align with who I'm becoming or, the weight loss I want. Like for you, it's like, I don't want to lose a half a pound a week. I'd like to lose one. Well, little shits like this is what stands in the way of that. like just these little moments. And it is true that it's not as bad as it used to be. It's also true, it's not what you want to be doing. And so, like, to just tell yourself, like, oh, I don't really want to be doing this anymore. So I wonder why I am. And then now I'm like going down the path of self-exploration. But if we just kind of like, I don't want to feel bad about it. So I'm going to tell myself it's better than it used to be or whatever. I lose out on that one piece. So if you are going to say that, because it does help you to stay out of beating up yourself land, at least add, and this isn't how I want to be eating either. So I wonder why I am doing that.
And I don't like, I mean it, I'm drawing blanks on why. Why am I doing it? I don't know. I mean, I got the only the connection that I can make is, well, I was tired and I don't know. Was I trying to like calm myself? Was it, I don't know. I'm having a hard
Well, when
time.
well, one thing is when we're tired, definitely our decision-making skills go to the toilet. Like when you're tired, your logical brain is running, like it's like looking at your phone and realizing I've got 5% battery left. And it's like when you have 5%, you're not going to fire up a YouTube video on how to do something. You got 5%, you're in emergency mode. I can only do, and I need to get plugged in immediately. So like you're like, just know that that's one reason. Now, if you didn't eat popcorn and ice cream last night, go back to the moment. If were you in bed or sitting on the couch?
On the couch.
Okay, so we're on the couch, and is your husband eating?
Well, in that case, I was like, "Do you want one, hon?" He's like, "Yeah."
Okay,
So
so
he
we have
was.
communal. All right, would he have ate whether you asked or not?
No, if I had asked, he wouldn't have. No. And he usually doesn't.
Okay.
He's.
Well, that's good. So one thing you can do is just tell him, hey, I don't want to eat at night. And if I ask you, do you want something? Please say, no, I don't. And I don't think you do either. Or say, no, I don't. And Corinne would ask you, why do you think you want to? Like if you can get like I'm always telling y'all, if y'all can get you a ride or die partner who will like challenge you on stuff, it might infuriate you in the moment, but your better self said, I do this with Chris all the time. Anytime I need like guardrails and I know what I want to do, but I know me too in the moment. I get giddy, I get excited, I just want to do things. Like my logical brain is like, fuck this, let's party. Like it's just, you know, on. I make
Well, I
Chris
mean,
responsible. I just tell him, like, I need you to remind me, clear clarity, Corinne thinks all these things. Please tell me that. I may still do it, but I'd much rather hear my own words reflected back to me than to just hope that I'm going to think of them. That's one thing. But the main question I want to ask you is, let's say that you had the thought you wanted ice cream and popcorn, and you went to get it and you sat down, and then suddenly I swooped in and took it away, and you just weren't going to be able to have it, no matter how, and your brain just kept asking for it, asking for it, asking for it. Now, what would you be thinking if you weren't going to have popcorn and ice cream last night?
This.
Huh?
Fuck this. I know that's just
Yeah.
the first thought that had popped into my head.
Yeah. All right. So that's good to know. So why fuck this? Why are you like, well, fuck that? That's not fair. Or
Yeah, I
whatever. Like,
just
what is the energy behind that?
I guess it's just like I don't like being told what to do. I don't like to be controlled. I don't like to be, and I just and I guess because I feel like some, I don't know what it is, anxiety or something, or like there's something that I'm feeling with that, that I would be like, not have to feel if I was eating it.
So if last night, if you had, let's reverse it. Last night, you're on the couch, you offer like to the hubs, hey, you want something? And he's like, no, I don't want anything. And that's all he says, I don't want anything. And you're about to go get it. And you're going to tell yourself no. Like, oh yeah, not supposed to be eating this stuff. What would you have had to have felt through the entire next show Like, what in your mind, watching that next TV show without popcorn and ice cream would have been like what?
And I would have felt scared, like, I'm gonna go get it anyway. I would have felt like, oh, I don't know. It's weird.
It's not weird. It's very normal. Just keep talking.
Yeah, I just would have felt like, I mean, this is what happens when even, yeah, I'll sit there and I'll be like, okay, I'm not gonna do that. No, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna do that. And then I'm thinking about it all the freaking time. And then I'm just like, oh, fuck this. Go do it. And then I
Okay.
have to think about it anymore. Like, how do I
But
turn that shit off?
that right. We don't turn it off. You've got to have a better conversation. It's the way you're talking to it is what's
Okay.
driving you to rebel against yourself. Also, I want to just point this out. You think I don't have to think about it anymore. And yet you and I are sitting here thinking really hard about it. You do, like, you need to tell yourself, like, hey, you can go eat more, but that doesn't mean we don't have to think about food anymore. I'm gonna need to think about it tomorrow. I'm gonna think about it when I get on the scale and I'm frustrated that I'm only losing 1/2 pound a week. Like, you have to tell your, like, I'm really good at telling my brain the entire story. And I think that's what I'm noticing with you is you're telling convenient parts of the story, not the truth. Because the truth is, well, I might not have to think about it anymore right now through this television show, but I will spend days thinking about this because I've got to figure this out. Why I can't just be like, yeah, I'm not eating it. And I don't care how many times my brain asks. Because y'all want to turn that off. And I am telling you right now, it does not turn off until you quit giving into it. So, like, have you ever had kids?
I don't have any kids. I'm a stepson.
All right. Have you ever seen a kid that's little, like even on the internet or in a movie, and when they want something and they don't have like emotional, like a 3-year-old throwing a fucking tantrum in Target will throw one every single time. If by the end the mom caves and just gives them something to make them happy. You're
Yes, I
doing the
get
same
that.
thing. You're giving yourself something to make you happy because your brain is like, if I throw enough of a fit, Kathleen will cave. And so I'm just going to tantrum it out. And so the first phase is you have to listen to that brain of yours. And instead of being mad and saying, like, nope, you can't have that. Nope, you can't have that. You need to explain why to your brain you're saying no. You need to say things like, here's why I'm not having it tonight. I don't want to have to think about what I ate when I weigh in on the scale. Another reason why I'm not eating tonight is I eventually want all of this food noise to really get shut down. And it's not going to get shut down if every single time I tell my brain, at the end of food noise comes popcorn and ice cream. Like, why would your brain give that up? If I was your brain, I would be in your house right now throwing a fucking tantrum. I'm like, it's 11 o'clock. Why are we not having ice cream and popcorn right now? Like, and just notice the GLP-1 did not shut down that food noise.
Right, I know. Yeah. That's what I said, 'cause you were just talking about, oh, it reduces the food noise, and I'm thinking, I don't know, does it? Well, but it's first 4 weeks. I don't know, whatever. Maybe I'll ramp up to the next dose and it'll help. But that's not the point.
You got, like, I would just tell all of you really don't want all your food noise to shut down. Otherwise, you can't retrain your brain how to, like, you can't retrain yourself how to talk to yourself. You can't retrain your brain to have thoughts more automatic that make you feel better, that relax you. Like, and when you're watching television, I would probably, if you know that your brain's going to chime up every night before you start watching TV, I would tell myself, I'm probably going to have urges and my brain's going to start talking to me. And tonight I'm very prepared to listen to it. And I just want to quit rewarding my brain for food noise. So I'm just going to be really patient and I'm not going to tell myself, no, you can't have that or no, you shouldn't or whatever. I'm going to tell myself, just choosing not to. I'm just choosing to not have to deal with the repercussions of eating. I know I'm not hungry, but I may have urges anyway. My brain's just used to offering up food.
Excuse me, I'm making a note. Yeah, and the thing is that last night I did other, it's kind of like like I had a glass of wine with dinner, which is another like source of calories. And my thought at that time was that useless thought was, well, if I can keep it to one, I mean, there's like it's always like a negotiation, right? And it's like, okay, so this is a weekend night, so I could have a glass of wine. But then other nights, maybe it would be better if I don't have a glass of wine because it's just useless calories, So last night I said, okay, I'm gonna have a glass of wine. It was a hefty glass of wine, by the way. And then afterwards I had herbal tea. So I did like this good stuff for myself, right? I'm like, I actually had the herbal tea instead of thinking I should have herbal tea instead of another glass of wine. I actually did it. And then I turned around after that and I was like, okay, then once I started with the ice cream, then I kind of quote couldn't stop. I mean, of course I could stop, but it was just like, no, I want something else. I want something else,
Yeah, you had already given in. And so once you start, it's harder to stop. It's always going to be harder to stop, especially if it was allowing you to not have food noise. If your thought is, it shuts down my food noise, well, then like your brain's
It
like, all
doesn't.
right, right.
Yeah.
Does not.
Okay, so better conversation
Tell
is the
me.
answer with
Oh, yeah.
myself.
Yeah, I want you to have a better conversation. I also want you to get better at negotiating. I think you need to become a high-powered negotiator, not a I'm at Payless Shoes on a BOGO trying to negotiate. Like, think about it. When your brain is like thinking about like the wine, and you're just like, it's always a negotiation. It's like, yeah, that is the way it is. But like the way that I think about it is, people who barely get what they want out of life don't talk to themselves very much. They have a lot of running commentary, but they're not talking with themselves. They're just having their thoughts and never questioning them and just been like, this is the way it is. This is who I am. And I'm just going to go out in the world and live out everything that goes on in my brain. When you decide to have a much better life, like, and weight loss is a part of it. And you're going to get better at, like, I just need, I get a sense from you. I just want a better relationship with food. I don't want all these diet rules. I want all of this to feel a lot easier. You become a master negotiator with yourself. You go from being one of the 95% that just sit around and never negotiate with themselves. They're just always like, well, I want it. So I guess that's the way it is. And you get to where you become someone who's highly aware of what you think and how you say things and how you talk to yourself and the things that your brain is asking for, and you become a great negotiator. And it doesn't feel exhausting because you're not, there's when you're negotiating, you're both trying to get to the best deal possible. When you're arguing with yourself, which is what a lot of you think is negotiation, that's not negotiating. I don't know why I keep trying to say it that way. It's not negotiation. That's fighting with yourself. That is exhausting. Talking with yourself to negotiate how you want to think and feel about food and what you want to do and things like that, that's not exhausting because there's no yelling, there's no demeaning, there's no saying you can't have, there's no one side has to win. No, a negotiation is where both sides win. So we want to make sure that for you, you're winning, but also the food life you want to have is winning.
That helps a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good
Okay.
luck.
Thanks. I
I
appreciate
think
it.
you just work on that nighttime stuff first. Just work on your evening and
Okay.
start there, and then you can work on the rest. Okay.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
you.
Appreciate it.
All
All
right.
right. Bye-bye.
All right. Let me look at these two questions. Somebody said they loved the decluttering call yesterday, but I thought it was a one-time thing. It's populating my calendar for a whole week. Sylvia, will you just write in to support at pmptribe.com or go to the website? There's a question mark. on the website, a blue question mark. Tell them that for some reason the calendar has it populating over and over. It's not supposed to do that. It either is your settings or it's something that we've like just got some tech twisted on the back end, and we can fix it. I feel like my metabolism is shut down. I lift weights and my trainer wanted me to increase my protein. I did for 2 weeks and gained 10 pounds. Have Hashimoto's and went through early menopause. I just can't get the hang of how much less I can eat to match my metabolism. Any thoughts? Joy, I just wouldn't assume it's your metabolism. Have you had your metabolism tested, number one? Like a really good test to see like what is your actual metabolic rate? That is like, I think sometimes we assume those things. I would love to see what your menu was for 2 weeks if it caused you to gain 10 pounds because you upped protein. Like if you were to add 100 grams of protein a day, that would be 400 total calories. To gain 10 actual pounds, good Lord. Let me do the math. 10, I don't know why it always starts off with a zero or a 0.0. 10 times, you'd have to have ate 35,000 calories of protein in 2 weeks to get that response. So I'm not saying that maybe you had a couple pounds of, if you just started lifting weights or something along those lines, that might have happened. But 10 pounds in 2 weeks, either go to the doctor and figure out what's going on, because that's a big thing, or let me see what you were eating. Because, y'all, I'm just gonna, if all of you like could just get to 70 to 100 grams of protein a day, that is not that many calories. Protein is 4 calories per gram. And then y'all act like you're fixing to eat a side of beef and the three little piggies on top. That is not what we're doing. So I would be curious what you ate.
Hi.
Hey, how are you? Did you need
I'm
help?
good. I'm such a big fan and have been of yours for 5 years from the podcast. So thank you for calling on me.
You're welcome. What's your name, by the way? I don't want to call you iPhone.
My name is Lavinia.
Lavinia. Okay, great. Thank you. All
Oh,
right.
well, I'm just so thrilled to be here. I'm very new to the program, but not new to you. So,
Yeah.
but I just feel like the program has already added so much value that I'm just like so excited. So thank you. I'm excited to be here. I always listen to your podcast for like mindset work stuff, and I felt like you really healed my relationship with food. But in terms of my weight, I've been the same weight for like a million years and like exercise a ton usually. So I never had to be very strict about calories or anything like that. And then I got diagnosed with Hashimoto's last year, very like mild. And I was actually even able to put it in remission I was on meds for like 6 months and then I put it in remission. But I have had some health challenges that aren't serious, but some gastritis where I like lost a bunch of weight 2 years ago, because my stomach was inflamed. That was awful. And then I think it triggered the Hashimoto's. So when I regained my weight and got healthy again from the gastritis, I ended up like overshooting my normal set weight by about 10, 15 pounds. And I just like have not been able to lose it. And like I'm not perfect about food. Like I'm still learning so much about like waiting for hunger and stopping at enough. But it's definitely like I just love the last question that was asked because I'll definitely notice things where I like did all the things. I started with a trainer and like with Hashimoto's, if I even like work out too much with a trainer, if I go too heavy, I'll like gain a ton of weight. If I look at it, just feels like the weight is not coming off. And one thing that has helped is like with my trainer, for the other caller who wrote in the Q&A to just go with a little bit of like less intensity in the gym, but still building muscle. I think that helps with inflammation. But I was just wondering if you've had like people with Hashimoto's and what to say to them when I'm doing what I feel like is so much more than I used to do. And I know I'm not perfect, but The weight is just not budging. Like, it's literally, I think I've like gained a pound since I started the program. So I don't have that much weight to lose, but I also am, I'm willing to try anything, and I'm just looking for some guidance when the scale and inches on my waist are not moving.
When you say I'm not perfect, what does that mean?
Yes, that means like I would let you know if I was like, I'm like stopping at enough and waiting for hunger perfectly. That's not the case. But when this is all happening, I never track calories because it just doesn't work for me personally. But I was like, why don't I just like see how many calories I'm eating just to see if I'm totally eating like way too much? And I've just been trying to like wait for hunger and stop it enough. And I generally been eating like 1800 calories a day. And like I walk 10,000 steps and like exercise like a few times a week outside of that. So I am certainly like yesterday I had an overeat where I ate more than that, but it wasn't like crazy, crazy more. I think I ate like 2800 yesterday. So I'm just, yeah,
Why
I definitely have a ways to go there. Yeah, go ahead.
did you eat an extra, what was going on yesterday? Was that
Yeah.
emotional? Like, what was happening yesterday?
Stress. Yeah, I had a really stressful day at work. I don't work normal hours, so I'm a musician. I had like a really stressful long day and a long drive, and that was a trigger for me for sure.
So I'm going to ask it like this, because I think what, and this is so common, so I'm really glad you're bringing this up. Y'all kind of come in here and you love to ask what I call the wrong question.
Okay.
And what I mean by the wrong question is you think you need to solve the 10 to 15 pounds you can't lose. And the
Yes.
problem is if you don't solve the reason why the 10 to 15 pounds won't come off, you're not, you're, it's like you're so worried about the 10 to 15 pounds, like you didn't even lead with. You know, Corinne, I think I know exactly what is keeping this extra 15 pounds on. I stress eat. Can we dive into stress eating? So I need to get like even yesterday, I had a day where, you know, I overate and I ate because I'm stressed. And I know that between me and 10 to 15 pounds is I can't be stress eating to get there.
Yeah.
So it's just really important for all of you. It doesn't matter if you've got 100 pounds or 10 pounds to lose. It's a reasonable assumption to think that I will never get to my weight that I want to be, nor be able to keep it off if I'm not working on the things that stand between me and that right now. And when we, you know, introduce the basics and hunger and enough, those are great, like, things to do. But they're really there to illuminate the path of anytime I'm not stopping at enough or eating before hunger, I really need to know the reason why. Because if it's not a great reason that makes complete sense, that I could say, like, I could keep this type of eating for the rest of my life and I would lose weight and keep it off. If it's anything outside of that, that is your unique diet plan you have to go on. So, like, you're going to have to figure out how do I become someone that can have a stressful day and be there for myself instead of have a stressful day. I can't tolerate myself when I'm stressed so much so I've got to eat to escape it.
Yes. I guess what I love that, and I have so much to grow in that space. Like I thought I knew everything. So I was like, I've listened to every podcast episode, but even like just being part of your program, I'm already like really asking myself, like, am I hungry? And then just realizing, like, I don't even think I have hunger cues yet. Like, but I guess what is, I would really love to pick your brain about that. I'm just not sure I have understood from the content yet is this piece of like I've always had a little stress eating and it's never been a problem because I exercise a lot. Something about the Hashimoto's is like I'm not eating perfect, yes, but I'm not eating like different than I have been the rest of my life or the past years that I've always weighed this one
Okay, but
thing
you
and
haven't had Hashimoto's then.
Yes, I never had
different.
Hashimoto's before, and then like something about this diagnosis, and like I cannot get the scale to move, and it's so discouraging. Like I just am,
Right.
you
This is the
know.
difference. Maybe this will help.
Okay.
When you didn't have Hashimoto's and you look young, how young are you? My God, you.
37.
Yeah. All right. This here comes the most depressing news of all. You've had two things. Like you think you're comparing apples to apples, and we got to compare apples to oranges now.
Got it.
This version of you used to not have Hashimoto's and was younger. And it just is not a far stretch. Most of us will even agree that if you go out on the internet, 20 and 30, younger 30s can get away with a lot of shit. Like, I don't know, like even just like drinking. In my 20s, my God, I could put down a bottle of tequila and go to work the next morning. Now, if I have a smell of tequila, I'm hungover the next day. I mean, I can't even smell it. So, but I'm 50. Now, you're not my, or I'm 51. You're not my age, but I say this because I keep hearing this frustration of it doesn't make sense why it's not working now. Because back when I didn't have Hashimoto's and I was younger, this was happening. And it's like, no, we need to solve the problem of I am 37. I am also, I have Hashimoto's now. Back then, Lavinia could stress eat if she wanted to. Didn't matter. Lavinia at this age and at this stage, stress eating means how, welcome to 10 to 15 pounds.
Got it. Amazing. And do you have, I heard you just mention this just a few minutes ago. Do you have something you recommend to go get your metabolism tested? Because I would love to just know where my baseline is now because the 10 pounds came on within like 1 to 2 months. It wasn't like a gradual thing. It just boom, you know? And I just wonder, I would love to give myself support with that too, in case it just, I don't
Yeah,
know.
you need to look at doc. My doctor actually does that as part of my yearly physical. But I go
Amazing.
to a, he's a, I think he's called a DO. I don't really know what that means, but my husband picked him out because my husband is really funny about doctors, and he was, he's very cerebral. And we knew that me and my son were going to go be going, and we wanted a doctor who could also take a more natural approach to things, but also blend in Western medicine. So he usually takes a more natural approach until medical intervention is needed. And that has a lot to do with Logan having autism and stuff, but he just does it. And now I think the way that he's got an in-body scan, I think I'm saying the name correctly. And then through that, it tells me like my muscle mass and everything, and it will give you whatever. There's, but if you just look up on the internet, like I like metabolic rate testing, and then just you might have to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole on it, but don't be looking for some fly by night shit. Like look for something that's scientific, like a deep cuts. And then also, I hate to do this all the time. Chrissy Larson, do you have any answers on that? Chrissy is a pharmacist and stuff. She typically has like some information that I don't normally have. So she's a member of ours. She's also a coach and things like that. So she said the test that you mentioned in is one of the best. Yeah. It's InBody. I think it's EMBODY. So you can go and see if you can find somebody that does an in-body scan. I've also had a DEXA scan. DEXA scan is another version that can tell you that. And that will just tell you, like, straight dope what your resting metabolic rate's going to be. And then anything you're doing on top, you know, fires off. But the other thing to consider, too, I just want to make sure all of you understand is, and especially because you kept mentioning exercise, your exercise isn't going to be the only contributing factor to the above and beyond what your resting metabolic rate for all of you is, where if you laid in the bed all day, pissed yourself and shit yourself, that's how many calories you would burn. You're not getting up. You're not even playing with the remote. You're not doing anything. And that is what your body needs to keep this body the way it is in survival mode. Okay. You don't want to eat those calories. Okay. Because it's going to be low. Like mine is, I think, 1457 or some shit like that. I
Wow.
don't really know.
Okay.
I mean, I could look it up, but it's in my Dropbox with my Deep Cuts medical stuff. I also exercise. I don't walk as much as you, but I think really hard most days. I am in a very like focused, creative state, or I'm coaching on calls. Like I have a very, what we would call mentally stimulating and active job all the time. Your brain also burns a lot of calories. The
Okay.
quality of foods that you're eating are also going to determine some of the extra calories that are burned just by nature of how hard your body has to process those foods and stuff. Now, I am not being an expert here. I don't want y'all quoting me on the internets or anything. This is the shit I've picked up over the years. I'm an internet savant. So, but I would just start there. Once you start there, but the main thing I want you to do is remind yourself that I wouldn't worry so much about the Hashimoto's causing this,
Okay.
and when I was younger, I could do this stuff. It's pulling your brain down a rabbit hole that's not the right rabbit hole to go down. If we're going to chase something, we should be chasing stress eating. Why did I have such a bad day? Like, first of all, like there's a lot of ways to attack it. We can attack like, all right, I'm a stress eater, so here's the things I need to do so that when I get stressed, I have this plan. But I also want to look at what's stressing me, because very often when we feel like we can't take the level of stress we have, it really has nothing to do with the thing. It has more to do with the thinking we applied to the thing. So, like if you had a bad day and you were for some reason putting it all on you, like I must not be good at my job, or like whatever, like if you were beating yourself up over it, or maybe you are saying it's so unfair, blah blah blah, but it is the way your company works. Like I watch teachers all the time talk about the unfairness, and it's like that is how school systems work. So if you're going to stay on the high horse of unfairness, you also have to stay on the high horse of feeling like ass. Or you can just say, this is the job I signed up for. I need to get used to this. Like, this isn't unfair. This is how it is. So now that I know that, what do I do? So we just have to look at two places. When I am stressed, what do I want to learn how to do for myself? And then also, if I have recurring stresses or patterns or whatever, I want to make sure I'm not making things harder than they have to be on myself.
That's amazing. I am just really, that's really resonating with me. And yeah, I don't even think I realize like most of my emotional eating is from those really long days until like just now. Like just thinking to my last overeat before yesterday was like similar, like in my car with the chocolate. It was like really tired, you know. So thank you. And I love the mindset shift about the Hashimoto's and like, well, before, like this is what I could do in terms of food, like I didn't have to worry about it, and how I've been so focused on like how to get my metabolism back, or like, and I just love the mindset shift of like, yes, maybe I do need to figure that out eventually, but until then, it's kind of a gift because now maybe I am forced to like look at the stress eating and how to wait for hunger and stuff like that. I think it's really cool. So thank you.
Yeah, it gives you the gift of solving the real problems of your life. And I think if nothing else, I'd love to pull this out for you, is just the Hashimoto's is somewhat in your control, somewhat not. There's like not a lot there that as of right now, until you figure some other things out, it's like it's kind of just sitting there and you have some influence over it. Your stress and things like that, you have all the influence over. That is totally in your control. You get to dial up your stress and dial it down however you want. Like, this is where I always find freedom for me. It's like, I'm always looking for what here can I totally control so I don't have to feel like something's happening to me anymore. Because if I
Wow.
can fix all this stuff, then all I'm left with is this over here. And then I have a lot of energy to work on it. Okay.
Amazing. This has just been very, very eye-opening and really cool. Thank you so much. And thanks for,
You're welcome.
I feel like the course actually helps me with like my career and stuff so much too. Not just the mindset stuff has like helped me so much in other areas of my life. I'm sure you hear that all the time, but I really appreciate that about it.
Well, I appreciate it. And look at you just drinking that water the whole time. Good for you.
Trying to impress you.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Let me answer these. Can you run through how to prepare for a potluck holiday meal? I read your tips to not, I don't know what that says, co-eat hungry and use a small plate or leave white space on the plate, but I still struggle to stop eating. Walk away. Here's the best, like, I'll give y'all the best tip. It's the simplest tip ever. Make your plate and get out of the fucking room. Go somewhere else. Do not sit there with all of the food only to be putting yourself through mental gymnastics the entire time. I very often, if I can control something, I am going to control something. That is always the first line of defense. If I had to stay in the room, then I need to work on my thinking. I need to be sitting there. If I have to sit and be staring at the food, I now need to know, okay, self, here's how I want to talk to myself while I'm in the room, because I know I am going to want to eat. I am going to have urges. My brain is going to beg. My brain is going to probably say, and you just give your flavor of excuses, like a little won't hurt. Last year you did much worse than this, like whatever those things are. You want to be prepared and be like, I know exactly the negotiating skills. Remember, we're talking about negotiation? I know exactly the negotiating skills my brain has, which is good. You know, the hardest thing to do in a negotiation is to go into a negotiation to negotiate something, and you don't know how the other party, what they're going to ask for, what they're going to demand, what they want, or anything. Y'all have leverage. You have the upper hand. Your brain is. Been talking to you like this forever. It comes in with the sad fucking plan every single time. It's like, I'm not changing. I'm going to negotiate the same way every single time because it's always worked. Your brain has had no reason to do anything different. So now, since we are like, all right, a master negotiator does research. They're trying to find out what the other person is going to ask for and what they're going to say. And what their limits are, and how do you talk to it? Like, how do I talk to my brain in such a way where it'd be like, well, okay, I guess if you say so, I agree. For some of you, like, there are moments where I can talk like an ass to my brain. I can boss it around and be commanding, and it works. For me, it fires up in me like determination or like badassery. There are other times I cannot do that. Because those times it makes I feel demeaned, I feel yelled at, I feel attacked, I feel like the yucky stuff. So you just have to think about what would it take to be at a potluck? And if I have to stay in the room and I can't leave, or I'm gonna have to be around the food for some reason, what do I need to tell myself when my brain wants to eat more, when it wants to eat a lot, when it wants to just eat past enough. Like, what is the best negotiating tactic? What do I think will actually work? And then you try that. And then you see. And if it doesn't work, then you go and you do a discovery worksheet. But you don't do a discovery worksheet on the ovary. You do your discovery worksheet on the whole experience. It's like, okay. I knew my brain was going to offer up all this stuff, and I tried these things, and I still ended up eating past enough. I wonder why. I wonder why this didn't work, why this technique didn't work. That will help a lot of you on your discovery worksheets because what I watch y'all do is do it ass backward. You will do a discovery worksheet on the same type of overeating 1,000 times, and you never, ever question what you're trying. You just keep writing the same shit over and over and over again. Instead of going back and saying, like, every discovery worksheet, if it's like, say it's like, let's not use the potluck as an example because that doesn't happen that often. Let's say it is stressful days eating in your car. Y'all will keep working. Well, I had a bad day and I ate in my car. I wonder why. It's like, we already know you had a stressful day. We don't have to solve that anymore. We just need to either figure out, like, all right, my work then is to figure out if it's repeating. Is my job supposed to feel this way all the time? If it's not, it is probably because I'm the culprit. It's me. It's the way I talk about my situation. It's how I feel helpless because I think these things. It's because I feel stressed because I think if I don't do it right, I will be fired or everyone will know I'm not cut out for this. Like, what is going on there? And then if you keep eating over it, you want to do discovery worksheets around the way you're trying to handle it too. It's like, I had a really bad day. I did a calming technique in the car. While I was driving, I noticed that I just kept thinking and thinking and thinking about the day so much so that I did end up eating again. So now what I want to do is like, okay, new problem to solve. When I try something, my brain still keeps asking for food. So now on my discovery worksheet, I need to go to the next level. It's not enough to do a calming technique. Now I got to figure out, all right, next time when I have a really stressful day, I'm going to do the calming technique and I'm going to have this whole thing prepared for how I handle an hour in the car, still being stressed, and I'm not going to eat. So, what is that solution going to have to be? So, you're kind of like, I want you to think about it. Discovery worksheets can bring out a couple of things. Once you're going to find the one you're doing, and then you can work on different techniques from that angle. But when you have recurring patterns, work on the root cause. Don't just keep trying to come up with techniques to not eat, but then be like, I'm going to keep the stress load that I carry. Like, I'm not going to work on any of that because I promise all of you, everything that you think in your life that feels like ass, that you think is just the way it is, I know that if you worked on it enough with the coaches, or you got a private coach to do it, or you come on coaching calls, if right now it's feeling like an 8, 9, or 10 on a level of pain, emotional pain, if you do enough work on it, we can now get it to a 2, 3, or maybe 4, where there are just things in life that aren't easy, but we don't make it any harder than it has to be. And then when you turn down the stress to a 2, 3, or 4, you don't have to eat. Now you can have negotiations with yourself. Now you can talk to yourself. Now you can keep your logical brain online. You can actually tell yourself, no, I don't handle it like that anymore. Ask all you want. That's just not what we're doing. You have the ability to do that. When you're at an 8, 9, or 10, you're in a crisis. It's going to be really hard for anything to work other than just figuring out how to get you from a crisis turned down so that then you can think. And so that's why it's really important when you're doing your discovery worksheets and you're looking at stuff, we want to find what are those core root cause problems? What is at the heart of my eating that I need to work on? And that the heart of your eating is almost always something to do with your life. It's a life situation. It is a way that you talk to yourself. It's how you feel about yourself. It's how you're viewing your world. It's how you're viewing your job, your children, your ability to mother, taking care of your parents, having no one. I'm retired and I don't have anybody. And now I'm like lonely as fuck all the time. Like all of those things, if they're riding at an 8, 9, or 10, I promise you there is a room to get them to a manageable level. Somebody's talking about happy hours and stuff. What if instead of saying, you said, I have to tell myself no all the time, rather than telling yourself no, what if you told yourself when you go in there, I'm really figuring out how to have happy hour on my own? I just want to be able to go to these things and just be me and have a good time. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm working on today. Rather than like now. Because sometimes that doesn't work. And if it's exhausting you, because you said, it's so much discipline. It's like, yeah, you're disciplining yourself all the way through it. It's called happy hour for a reason. It's supposed to be the hour of happy. You're just going to be happy without drinking. And you got to figure that out. And yelling at yourself the entire time is not the path to happy. Sometimes I'm behind on my water intake. And once I go too long, then I'm starving. Of course, your body will always ask for food hardcore if you are dehydrated. So yesterday I started off great, a nice filling, better best breakfast, half an autumn salad while I'm outside. And then at home, I ate my planned food and felt like I was starving. I know it was because of the water, but it felt so urgent. It will. It is urgent. If you don't have enough water, if you're dehydrated, so the body can go 30 days without food. It can only go 3 without water. That should show you the difference in what your body requires to keep you going. So urges always feel like a tornado siren's going to go off if you're dehydrated, because your body is saying, if you're not going to drink water, I've got to get it through food. So it's going to figure out a way to get you to eat more food simply because it's thirsty. So how can I mitigate the urge to overeat due to thirst? Drink some water. I was drinking and drinking, and it wasn't making a difference. It feels like it was a point of no return. And usually I drink more consistently, but do I just grit my teeth and bear it? You don't have to grit your teeth, but you need to tell yourself, I know the reason why I'm so ravenous. It has nothing to do with food. It's because today I got behind on my water, and I'm solving that now. And you just keep bringing yourself back to, body, I am solving that right now. I'm giving you water because I know that's what you really need. And it will keep asking for food. And you can just say, like, I'm really glad that you're asking for food, which means you would never let me die because I forgot to drink my water. My thirst mechanism has kicked in. It's like I missed my thirst mechanism in my mouth. And so my body sent urges as my like break glass when fire emergency. That's kind of what we do when we get behind in our water. We go from, it's like, your body says, I've got to sound the alarm and call the fire department because you're not getting enough water. And unfortunately, the fire department comes and they're not hosing you off with water. They're hosing you down with chips and cookies and ice cream, donuts. They're just throwing all that at you in an effort because all food is made up molecularly with water. Do you have any tips for women who are type 1 diabetic? I've been following doable hunger, but it gets blown when my blood glucose drops, and that keeps my weight the same. I understand you wouldn't give any medical advice, of course, but if you have any tips for experience on working with other type 1 diabetics, or if you know success stories in this program who were type 1, we do have, what I would do is I would post in the Facebook group and I would ask who here has lost weight as a type 1 diabetic, because I know we have plenty of them. Plenty of them. We may even have somebody in the chat right now. My best advice, though, is to get really good at understanding your blood glucose and try to avoid those situations as often as possible if you can. And doable hunger is going to get blown when your blood glucose drops. So you probably just want to have what I would call a plan. So sometimes what I notice is that if especially anybody that has like these types of issues, that your body immediately goes into a crisis mode. And it should. I mean, we want our bodies to flip out and freak out and do all of those things. So Susan is down 50 pounds as a type 1 diabetic. Here's another person. Oh yeah, Adia, type 1 diabetic, 102 pounds. So what I would do is maybe go to the Facebook group and ask the question of like, I'm a type 1 diabetic. I need y'all's best tips for anybody that has lost weight, because they will give them to you. I know Adia especially, because I mean, she's been a member for a long time. Very, very loving woman. I've met her several times. She's amazing. And I know she would, if she sees the post, just tag her, Adia. I know she would help you. What I was going to say though is having a plan for crisis mode. So if you think about, if your body thinks that like you're gonna die And I like for all of you, when you get too thirsty, your blood glucose drops, things like that. I mean, like your body treats all of it as if you are on the way to the emergency room right now. Like you are literally about to die. Now, a lot of times we're not, but our body doesn't understand that. Our body just knows how to panic because it thinks, solve right now. It's just trying to get the problem solved. And it knows if we panic, the problem will get solved faster. And so sometimes just anticipating that there is a level of panic your body is going to throw up and you being prepared for that and be thinking about, all right, what is the best plan I can give myself for how I think, how my body feels, and what I'm going to ingest when my blood glucose drops? What does that plan look like so that I'm prepared for that? On the other side, it's like, and what do I know about any patterns that I have that could help mitigate as many of those situations as I possibly can? What is like the preventative work that I can do so that I'm just not put into that situation very often? It's like very similar to our water drinker. It's like if you know you sometimes get really behind on water and stuff, it's like you should probably figure out why, what times is it easier for it to get away from you and what could you do about that? For me, I know that meeting days, like today, I've got y'all another call after this. I think maintenance is next. And then I'm recording the entire regain program this afternoon. So I'm going to sit in this room under hot lights. And I can't just go get me something to drink whenever I'm thirsty. And I'm doing so much talking, I'm not drinking much water. So I keep bottles of water in this room right here so that when I get a chance, I'm like power drinking all the way through it. And y'all know I do that because I will tell y'all, here we are going into another call and I haven't gotten a bathroom break and I'm doing the pee-pee dance in my chair. So it's just thinking about your situations and then planning for them. I think that is like kind of the theme of the day. It's like, think about y'all, what are these common patterns? You know, our lives are just not that unique. They really aren't. Holidays come every year. Your birthday comes every year. Anniversaries come every year. Vacations come every year. First of January comes every year. Stressful days come almost every week. Kids, we can expect them to act like asses. If they acted like an ass last week, probably gonna act like an ass next week too. That's not unpredictable. If your boss is a turd, that's a pattern. If you often get asked to work over, that's a pattern. Y'all make everything seem like this is a problem and I don't know what to do about it. It's like, this is a problem and you need a plan on what you're going to do about it so that you can help yourself lose weight. If something happens regularly, this is a pattern. This is not a surprise. This is, if it's happening regularly, it's not standing between you and weight loss. If it's happening regularly, the lack of a plan and figuring out what's happening inside of you, that's what's standing between you and the weight loss. But it's not the thing happening. If your house is chaos every night, your house being chaotic every night is not the problem. That's the pattern. And you're not coming up with ways to show up for yourself and it. And that's the problem. You're not breaking it all down to figure out where are the places where I can make things easier for myself on the inside first. Then, where are the places on the outside I haven't tried yet that I could make some stuff easier for me first? So it's like thinking about it that way. But I watch y'all stay spun up too much in this idea that, things are standing between you and weight loss. And they're just common patterns. And it's the lack of a plan around that for how I'm going to think, for what I'm going to do for myself, how I'm going to pull this apart, how much help, like if it's internal shit, like I know I get anxious, I know I get overwhelmed, I know I get these things. I need a plan for how often I'm going to go to ask coaches to work on this part of me. I don't want to be thin and anxious. I want to be thin and happy. And I'm probably not going to get thin unless I work on this anxiety shit, on what inside of me takes regular ass anxiety that everybody's going to feel to a 10. Because all of you are going to have negative emotions all the time. Welcome to being a human. We can't remove that part. But what we can do is we can remove the extra we put on top. We can figure out what pieces of all this do I control and what pieces am I not controlling right now that I totally could work on. And let me get grounded in all of that. Last question. So I plan to feel sad and helpless watching a loved one in decline, so it's predictable. Yes. My plan then becomes what? All right. So, Sylvia, this is a really good one. I don't think you have to feel helpless. I think you have to feel helpless, but I want to ask you, they're in decline. You're not helpless. You can be there, you cannot be there. You can console yourself or not console yourself. You can, like, I know when my grandparents were dying, both of them died brutal deaths. One had pancreatic cancer, the other one had stomach cancer. Neither one were fun. Both of them got to where they couldn't eat. It was all kinds of things. You know, the entire time watching them die, and one of them drug out for over a year, and one was only about 6 months, which was an excruciating long time for both of them, I will just tell you. I don't ever remember feeling helpless watching them die. I remember feeling really sad. I remember watching and feeling a lot of love. I remember being there and feeling grateful that I had a life and help that allowed me to, like when my grandmother particularly was dying, both of my grandparents, I always took the night shift. Aunt Logan was like about 2, 2.5 years old. And my mother-in-law would come and stay at our house because I would go to my granny's every night around 9, and I'd sleep in the floor and take care of her overnight. And then I would go home at 7 or 8 o'clock the next morning when my mother would get off work and she would take the day shift. So my mother worked nights then. And I just remember feeling grateful for my mother-in-law who helped me. I remember feeling grateful that I got to be there and help my mom out and help my grandmother out. I felt like I didn't feel helpless. I couldn't stop them from dying and I couldn't stop all that, but I never felt like that was something I was supposed to be able to do. So that didn't make me feel helpless either. And so what I would do is like examine, why do I feel so helpless? And is any of that really true? Should I be able to do the things that I think I should be able to do? But I think sad is like for me, my plan was I took food over to my grandmother's every day. I knew that I was going to be up all night. So I was going to be like, I ate my first meal when I got there. I had snacks through the night so that I wouldn't be eating what everybody else was bringing because people were always bringing us stuff because we were taking care of someone who was dying. And I had a plan for that. It's like, this is what I eat. I'm not eating this stuff. I had a rule. I was not going to gain weight. I was going to cry. I was going to take care of my grandmother. I was going to try to be the best mom I could. When I felt guilty for spending so much time away from my child, I would remind myself, like, I have a whole lifetime with Logan. I don't have much time left with my granny. And I would remind myself of that stuff. So I had to look for all the things that, you know, like I just knew for me, it was like, to me, this legitimately plan, this is the plan for sad. I would cry on the way home. I would cry in bed. I did so much of my grieving before my grandmother died that after she died, I grieved, but I grieved on what I called my timeline when I wanted to. I didn't put off grieving because she was still there. I knew the end was coming. And I just went ahead and gave myself space to do that without feeling bad or weird or guilty and stuff like that. So I think that's the plan you want to have. I think, sometimes what we do is we think we're not so, like, I don't want to feel sad. It's like, why? When someone's dying that you love, why do you not want to feel sad? That's good work to do because we're supposed to. And if you can think about how much fighting goes on with that, it's like, and if, this is if you love someone. Now, I mean, if you got a parent dying, like if my dad died, if he was going down the tubes or whatever, I might feel a little sad, but not to the level I did with my grandparents. But like, just imagine if my dad, something was happening to my dad, and I was sitting around thinking, I should be sadder. I should care more. I should have like repaired our relationship and stuff. I need a plan. A plan for how, like, in those moments, I want to speak to myself. I'm not going to resent. I refuse to resent my old self and her decisions. I refuse to feel bad about something that I agreed a long time ago was in my best interest. I refuse to second guess things. Like, and I think about that. Like, I kind of have a plan now for like my dad's passing, even though he's like, I don't know how he's doing, but like, I just think about all the things that can get in the way of our life. And this is how I think. And that's why I'm always trying to give you personal stories and trying to show y'all things because I think it's important for you to see. I don't just assume I'm going to feel a certain way. I think I'm likely to feel this way. And like, here's how I want to be there for myself in those moments because right now I know that's not what I want to feel. And I know that is also not 100% true. So, Sylvia, go through there and see if you can pull some pieces out with the helplessness. Work on that. Why do I feel so helpless? Because I will bet you there's a lot of room for you to like drop that feeling. And if there's not room to drop it, then we just figure out, how do I want to talk to myself when I'm feeling helpless? Probably like a friend. Like sometimes like your brain, it has, I was reading a study, I believe it was yesterday, and it was saying something about our brains have a really hard time seeing our future self. It's like it can't really do it without some help. And so there are some hacks that we can do around that. And your future self is like you who's going to be grieving and you who's doing these things. And it said one of the things that biohacks like the brain is by saying, and I mean, we do this all the time when we teach y'all, is in that situation, how would a friend advise that person? Because our brains are really smart and dumb at the same time. When we think about if I'm feeling helpless, what would my friend tell me about that situation? Very often, that's going to give you the answers you're seeking. Another hack that you can do is you can kind of tap into this idea of, if the version of me who is 5 years now down the road from this, what is it that she would want me to know? That's really important about this time and ask for her guidance and stuff. So sometimes we can do some stuff like that. The other thing that they were talking about, which is not related to this, is they said it's really good to, you can go to AI and you can give it a picture of yourself and you can tell it to age you. Like, give me a picture of me at like, 90 years old or whatever. And you look at that and then you talk to her. And that somehow tricks your brain. Your brain is like, it can be tricked really easily. So we can use a lot of these tricks to our advantage. So for some of y'all who are like worried you can't lose weight, you might want to age yourself and say, like, the version of me 20 years older than me, what does she want me to know right now? And you're looking at that version of you. And she's going to give you wisdom because all of those versions of you live inside of you. We just have to ask the right questions to get their answers and responses. So Sylvia says, I have a thought I should be doing something to ease his pain, which makes me feel responsible. Like, what should you be doing? Are you supposed to hop him up on more drugs? Like, I really want you to explore that. What else should I be doing to ease his pain that I'm not doing now? And if there is something, I bet you would do it. I bet the answer is you are not the person who should be easing his pain. You are the person who should be there, loving, grieving, being sad, connecting, and doing whatever it is that's actually in your purview to do. It's like with my grandparents, there was no alleviating their pain, and they were in immense, incredible pain, very bad pain. Well, I wasn't going to go get bags of ketamine and shit and be able to hook them up. There was like literally nothing I could do. I didn't ever sit and think I should be able to ease their pain. I usually thought they're in a lot of pain and this is hard to watch. And that's more of the truth. The reason why your brain is trying to offer you this idea that somewhere you've got some power, somewhere like you could do something about this, you just have to say, like, no, the truth is, this is just hard to watch because I love them. And I can't do anything to ease their pain. So I know that I don't need to even think this. So what can I do in this situation for me and them? And you're probably already doing most of it, except that your brain is arguing with you on something that is not even possible. Okay, that is it for today. Y'all have a good one.